Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz. My guest today is Nick Westergaard. He is a strategist, speaker, and educator, chief brand strategist at Brand Driven Digital, and the author of a book we're going to talk about today called Get Scrappy, Smart Digital Marketing for Businesses, Big and Small. So, Nick, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, John. I'm so excited to be here.
We better define this term scrappy. I could see a lot of people wrestling with what that means to them.
You hit the nail on the head. That's it's interesting. You talked to we were talking a bit before about the business of book sales, and you know that first sale to your publisher. And I feel like I knew what this was, and it is something that I found through kind of selling the concept. Though it's a term that we kind of all toss around, there's some different meanings for too. So that's what I found myself doing early in that process, and it occurred to me I should make sure I do this early in the book as well. So that is, in fact, what the introduction is all about. But really, you know, scrappy. I think the easiest way to get at it is to talk about anybody who is looking to do more with less. Now, kind of the problem with that comes in some of the stereotypes that we might have that, you know, it might mean dumbing down your work, dumbing down your marketing, or marketing on the cheap. But I really think it is, something that is a bit more rich than that, because I think that, as the subtitle suggests, it is about making sure that we're getting smart, that we have a solid strategy in place for what we're doing, and that we are looking for ways to simplify and do more with less, which is really what the book walks marketers through.
Yeah, and I've actually over the years struggled with that a little bit too, because there are certainly people that hear duct tape marketing and they hear, you know, low cost slapped together. And really what I'm talking about is, and have been, is the other attribute, which is just always works. And I think that certainly most people get that, but you're right. I think if people, you know, have a tendency to go the wrong direction with that, they can misinterpret what you're trying to get across. And really in some ways, you know, as I read through the book, it's partly a mindset, isn't it?
Absolutely. That is what I define it as ultimately, is this scrappy mindset, that it's about putting your brains before your budget, that it's about doing more with less, and about how you can simplify for the long haul. Because I think, you know, that's kind of a big part about the task at hand today, is that it's less and less work that we can set and forget, that we have many more tasks as marketers to juggle. And how can we do what's most effective, but also do so in a way that is efficient and isn't bogging us down as well? I think another big what scrappy is and what scrappy isn't, is that I also ran into a lot of people thinking, oh, this is just for small business. Mm. And while I think it's certainly ideas, as I'm sure that you've found too with the duct tape approach, that as you talk to larger businesses, they aren't looking to get any less scrappy, it seems. I think you just have a different problem. There's a quote that I mentioned early on from the marketing director at Schwinn, a bicycle company that, you know, been around for years. All of us, our kids, have ridden Schwinn's, and you might think of them as this great big brand, and really they are, but they have a small and I think scrappy marketing team. And when I was talking with them and talking about this concept, she said, "You know what? We could all do with a few people or a few dollars more." And I think that that's something that's true of both big and small businesses today.
I mean, I think that in the stereotypical setting, the much larger business, I think, has to work harder at being scrappy. I mean, let's face it, it's hard to be terribly scrappy if everything that you produce has to go through legal.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, the fact that you can't turn on a dime either. Right. I mean, that's I think one thing that, you know, with the whole small and big buckets that that we take for granted, is that even in pivoting and doing something new, getting something cleared, getting a budget in place, it does require you to be nimble and scrappy.
And I think that that's always, in my mind, been one of the advantages of small business is that in many cases, they do have the ability to turn on a dime and change direction, and they don't have to go to the board and say why we're going to lose money this quarter necessarily because we're, you know, changing direction. So that's always been a real, I think, a real advantage. But over the years, I have noticed that not only is change occur, but I think it's the speed at which it's occurring today that really requires people to stay nimble or scrappy regardless of where they are today.
Absolutely. And I think that we also, you know, because of that rate of change and, all, you know, not just a couple of new things, but we have so many new things coming at us. I think we're also kind of getting to this point where, you know, we really can't afford, no one, small business, big business, can afford for any of the number of reasons to do everything. And I think that too often we fall prey to what I call in the book checklist marketing, where instead of thinking through everything, we are quick to stand up a presence on every social network. Regardless if it makes sense, we're creating every form of content because that's what our perception of good content marketing is.
Yeah, when I started my business, there were maybe five or six channels that we really had available to get the word out and to create awareness. And I routinely cite 16 today. And we can debate, you know, whether or not they're sub-channels of channels. But how do you advise a business who is taking this kind of scrappy approach to first off, you know, pick the right channels, but also then stay sort of cognizant of what's coming and going? I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, Facebook advertising is really, really hot right now for a lot of businesses, a lot of types of businesses, a lot of sizes of businesses. It wouldn't shock me a bit if 6 months from now, nobody did Facebook advertising. You know, so how, you know, how does somebody balance the need to experiment in these places because they might be today's hot thing, but not get so fragmented?
Well, and that's why I think you have to start with a strategy. You have to, you know, avoid that kind of channel mindset of, you know, think we have to be doing, you know, something on Facebook, something on Snapchat. I think that's a big one that it's hard to avoid and is certainly one that, you know, about every other marketing article is about Snapchat. And I don't think that Snapchat won't prove to be interesting, but I think for many, you know, there may not be a place for it right now. I think that most of the client work, I feel like in quarter one of this year was about, oh, everybody's saying that we should be doing something on Snapchat, but I can't find the fit. And, you know, part of my job sometimes, I'm sure you would agree as well, you sort of feel like a business therapist and letting people know that it's okay if you can't find an application for Snapchat.
Right.
You know, in talking about what I mentioned in the book about strategy is, you know, thinking of it as really a marketing map of getting from point A to point B, and that point B being the business objective that you're trying to accomplish. Because regardless of which of the 16 channels you're considering, you're trying to do something at the end of the day. So defining what that marketing objective or objectives are, and then figuring out which channels make the most sense, because not all of those 16 different platforms do the same things equally. But I think if you have that business objective nailed down, you know a little bit more about what makes the most sense and when.
So I was getting a little ahead of myself with the channel conversation, because no surprise here, you start the book really talking about kind of phase one is getting your foundation in order, which for you, of course, is branding. Again, I'm really sounding old on this podcast because I keep saying back when I started. But the fact is, even 10 years ago, when I would talk to small business owners about branding, it was like, wait, you can stop right there. You know, that's not for us. That's for those big guys. Fortunately, some of that mindset has changed. But, you know, how do you get past a little bit of the perception of what branding is and who it's for?
Well, I think, you know, the first promise, because I think it is amazing, because we've always been, I think people have always been, at least in my time working with marketers, you kind of get that eye roll that comes with mentioning branding. And I think the way digital's changed that is that, you know, so many are quick to, you know, all these tools are so quick and easy to use. You know, you can stand up a presence on any social network. You can go publish a blog post just in a few minutes if you really want to. And I think that led to kind of this early phase of kind of just do it marketing, that we're just going to do everything. And I think now, as we look at everybody's creating content, all the data says that everyone's producing more content than they were last year. Sure. And most of it is going unused. So I think as marketers, we have to take a step back and figure out what is our unique contribution to the content in our industry. I mean, hopefully we can find a unique angle to cover, to create some helpful content for our customers. But in a crowded industry where there are several voices, then it is dependent on, you know, what the brand is, as I say, behind your marketing megaphone.
Yeah, I've for years told small business owners, you have a brand. It's just whether or not you're directing it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have one. It's not a question of do I have one, do I not, because I'm big, because I'm small. It's just a question of whether or not it's intentional.
Yeah, it's, it makes me think of 6 degrees of podcasting. I was actually recording an episode of my podcast, and I was talking with the CEO and founder of Uberflip, and he said something that I thought was really telling on the relationship for everyone that wants to roll their eyes at branding and brand building. He talked about kind of the overlap of content strategy and brand strategy, and I thought that was a really, really smart way of looking at that, because your brand strategy is ultimately, you know, what your voice is. And if you are kind of rudderless in your content, chances are you're rudderless as a brand as well.
Yeah, and let's talk a little about content, because that's actually how I've started addressing it. I have been for a number of years now talking about content first and foremost as the voice of strategy. And that it's not a blog post, it's not a medium, it's not a form of tactic or marketing. It is the voice of strategy, and that, you know, is a huge foundational component. So how do you get past? I mean, I'm based on what you said earlier, I'm assuming you sort of agree with that idea. But then, how do you get that business owner past the fact that it just takes a lot of work?
I do agree, and I think it does take a lot of work, and a lot of work manifests itself a lot of different ways. You know, one of my kind of scary ideas to some might be that a lot of work isn't always a lot more content. Yeah. I think it's easy to kind of fall into that trap of we're just, you know, we've turned our content marketing engines up to 11. And it's for all the Spinal Tap fans out there. But I think that in getting more strategic, I love that quote of yours about did you say content being the voice of strategy?
Yeah.
Because I think that sometimes that may mean that harder work means doing your homework and making more focused content quality wise instead of just more content quantity wise.
Yeah, and a lot of times I'll tell people that the good news is it's more work, because that means your competitors won't do it.
Yeah.
So you use a couple interesting metaphors, and one I want to kind of unpack a little bit is this idea of applying a compass to, you know, I don't think you called them channels, but in effect your, you know, platforms, networks. I'd love if you could kind of lay that out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, after talking about branding, the brand behind the megaphone, I build on that metaphor that I talked about earlier of, I think sometimes you also get the eye roll with strategy, because especially at larger organizations, they think of that as, you know, we're going to go take half of the executive team and put them in a room for a few months, and we're going to come out with just another binder that sits on the shelf next to the crisis plan. And instead, I think what we all need to make sense of marketing today is a map for getting to point A to point B, and that along the way, as new channels emerge, that you may think of, if I'm overextending the metaphor, as places that we run into on our journey, new things like Snapchat, if we know where it is we're trying to go, what that business objective is that we're trying to reach, then it helps us and serves as a bit of a compass in helping us know if we should stop at that particular channel or platform. You know, if you want to pick on Snapchat just a little bit, you know, if you have a lead generation business objective, I'm not sure the way Snapchat works right now, if that's the best channel to help you support that. It's certainly what all of the headlines are about and what all of us marketers are talking about. And I still think it behooves us to understand how these platforms work, and we still have to get under the hood and learn about them. But we have to learn about them to know if it is going to work best for us in those particular situations with the business objective that we have.
Yeah, and I was just at Social Media Marketing World this last week, and certainly there were several segments on it. One of the more well-known social media gurus and influencers said it's, you know, the next best thing since sliced bread. And it was interesting. He was being interviewed at the time, and the person interviewing him said, can you share a business-to-business case use where you've seen it be successful? And he just flat out said no. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, I'm kind of with you. It's worth exploring. There's a lot of users on it. I might try to think about ways that it could enhance my customer experience or not. But to be, you know, so positive and pro this tool that then nobody could actually cite anybody having any success with, I thought was rather interesting.
Well, and in the book, I kind of go channel by channel, and I'm sure as you've found, you always dread going channel by channel for the stuff that, you know, you didn't have time to include, but luckily got Snapchat.
Or that makes the book obsolete in 60 days.
Exactly. Yeah, that big MySpace chapter I have. But in talking about Snapchat, you know, when I do go through that, you know, Google brands using Snapchat, and I guarantee that the first few articles are going to be about Taco Bell.
Yes.
But in looking at that, I don't think that's an accident. Look who it is they're trying to reach, yeah, and what their business objective is, and it fits.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you'll also see, you know, a lot of times people jump on those things, especially big brands, because they actually want the PR. That comes along with being seen as this incredibly innovative company. Even if they're getting zero value out of the channel or the platform, it's the stories they're getting in the media coverage they're getting in more traditional channels that actually is what's paying off.
Absolutely, and I think it, you know, as kind of an odd way to accomplish that aside, I think that, you know, I talk about, you know, the different business objectives, and certainly public relations is one of them. So I think that if that's what your goal is, that would certainly be a way of doing it.
So let's jump towards the end here and talk a little bit about measurement. And I think that's, you know, that's the one that so many marketers don't really want to address, because, you know, they have to be accountable. They have to actually, you know, show results. But certainly the only way to be scrappy, the only way to know if what you're doing is working, what if you should move on quickly, I mean, is to have good metrics. So how do you figure out what matters and measure it?
Exactly. Well, I think the biggest piece, it kind of really, that being one of the final chapters, it kind of comes full circle, I think, as a book. And I note that early on as well, because all of this boring homework that we don't want to stop for when it comes to setting a business objective, building a strategy, will really hurt us in the end if we skip that homework when it's time to measure something. Because after that, we're left with all of the raw data that all these different platforms and channels spit out, which, if you want to, we could do all sorts of terrible things with and make a bunch of charts that go up and to the right. I think that without a business objective defined, you can't put together a recipe for the various metrics that come out of there. Out of the different channels to help you know what matters most for your business as well.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting as an author. I mean, we should all put that chapter first. But who wants to read that first, right?
I know. I opted for strong allusions to the end. But it's funny because I also teach at the University of Iowa, and My social media marketing course really is probably, if I was to add another word to the course title, it would be social media marketing strategy. Yeah. And that is how I teach it. And I guess I'm less afraid that students will put the book down because they're kind of stuck with me for 16 weeks.
All right.
But I do start with the measurement side of that, because you do have to kind of reverse engineer this if you want to, if you want information you can use in the end. And I think that that's the other part of, you know, I think that's in all of our DNA, when a lot of people sort of do identify with the word scrappy, is that it is about doing more with less, but it's also about, you know, not being afraid to roll up your sleeves and do that homework, whether that's figuring out a way of creating more strategic content, even if it's less content, but also doing your strategic homework so that you can measure what matters in the end.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, I mean, you're never done with this. It's not like you go through your steps in here and then you're done. I mean, you're going to come back and cycle back. And so that's how I always tell people, when we get to the measurement chapter, it's like, just pretend you're beginning again, you know, because you've got all the ideas now. Now let's go build it, but let's start here.
Well, and I think you reminded me with that that smart mindset that the actual chapter following the measurement chapter contains that very John Jantz quote that I loved. I think it was in The Commitment Engine, where you talk about, and that's why I think it's one of those strategy stereotypes we have. It's about the book that we make. It's about the binder that sits on the shelf. It was about the meetings that made the plan, instead of kind of the plan as a living, breathing document that is going to change along the way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Nick, where can people find out more information? Obviously, the book's available anywhere, but where can they find out more information about you and about what you're doing with Scrappy for those folks that want to dive deeper?
Yeah, the best place would be getscrappybook.com. And that has all sorts of information about the book. You can read the aforementioned introduction, kind of defining the scrappy mindset there for free. And there's all sorts of other fun stuff there as well.
Awesome. Nick, thanks so much for joining me. Awesome work on the book, and hopefully we'll see you out there on the road. We're not too far away. You probably come through this little Berg every now and then, don't you?
I do, probably more than you come through Iowa.
Well, who knows? You know, I usually like to wait till it's really hot and humid and the corn's about 8 feet tall.
That's the best time.
That is the best time. Take care.